Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
AI, Gen AI, automation, digitization, data analytics. Companies know they have to embrace cutting-edge technologies if they're to remain relevant in the future. But business leaders are also concerned, fearful, and at times apprehensive. So too are their many workers. So how can we bridge the gap? How can business leaders make new technologies work for their companies and for their people? Owen O'Reilly is a partner with EY in Dublin and the firm's Irish leader for AI and data. In his role, he helps clients from listed corporations to multinationals and from government departments to large private companies design and deliver data and AI-driven strategies to help grow revenues, to optimise costs and to manage risk. Owen joins me in studio now. You're very welcome.
Great. Thanks very much, Ian.
And we're going to talk about those things, Owen, about how companies can grow their revenues, manage their costs and manage their risks. I just want to start off by focusing on you because AI, data, analytics, they're all words that are very much in vogue now, but you've been at this a while.
I have, Ian, yeah. So I guess my own background, Ian, was initially as a technologist, you know, so I started my career building and integrating systems in government, actually. And then I, for some reason, decided to become an accountant, which is never a bad thing in a big four organization. But I guess I've spent the last 20 years working with clients across public and private sector, trying to make sense of this data game, this analytics game. And this is before AI got, you know, exciting and everyone wanted to talk about
everyone
it.
Everyone was talking and everyone's looking at what it means for their companies. But you were there before all of that.
I would like to say I was there at the beginning, but maybe not quite, because actually some of these techniques are probably 50 years old. You know, AI is not a new term. You know, we've been talking about AI just in lots and lots of different guises and lots of different families for over 50 years.
I'm interested, you know, there's two things to your job title. You've got AI and data. And at times I was saying to myself before this podcast, what was the relationship? How were you going to? And then the more I thought about it, the more I realised, and it's something you also told in the Oireachtas committee recently, that the quality of your AI and how it impacts upon your business really is dependent upon the data that you have.
They're so interlinked, Ian, and it's a really good point. I mean, we had a group of CEOs in last week with the minister from Irish corporations talking about their journeys in AI and talking about their journeys in data. And one theme that came up more than anything else was we really want to get on with AI. We really believe in it. We like what it will deliver for us. But we're having some real practical challenges with our data and how our data is organised. So to explain that in very simple terms, I mean, if you think about use of AI in your day-to-day life, you know, I don't know, I'm sure you listen to music, I'm sure you watch movies. So the data that's used to feed those AI algorithms is really your profile, what you've watched historically, you know, what maybe other people like you have watched. So that's a huge part of how AI actually operates and how it makes that next best recommendation to you, you know, to see what's going to come better. And that's no different in the Gen AI world, you know, this new family that we've been hearing so much about in the last 2 years. Again, hugely dependent on how your organization's data is organized, how the data is organized, how easy it is to access, how secure it is.
I was going to say how safe it is as well.
How safe it is. And if, unfortunately, there's no magic bullet on those. I mean, sometimes you see in the media that, you know, Gen AI is going to do the devil and all and going to solve everything. And it's just not the case. There are hard yards that you gotta go down to get data in shape, to get it ready, to get it organized so you can get the benefit of these tools.
Yeah, I always liken it to graphs don't just appear from the ether. You know, when you're looking at a graph,
yeah,
they come from a spreadsheet.
Correct.
And you can just transpose that spreadsheet into a graph. So you have to have the data underneath it.
Yes, so true. And I think what a lot of organizations are seeing is they're getting excited about, okay, you know, you talk to some of the benefits. So they see the opportunity to improve their sales organization and to know more about their customers. They see how they could use AI to maybe interact with those customers in a different way. But then they go to the project and they realize, oh my goodness, we're missing data. We don't have complete information on our customers. And that starts a whole spiral of activities to try and improve the data. The thing we always say to the mean is that those things need to run in parallel. Your step one can never be solve your data quality problem, because you'll never get off step one if you know, if that's your organization's objective.
I referenced earlier that you were giving evidence before an Oireachtas committee. The title that you had was Embracing the Transformational Opportunity of AI. But there was an interesting phrase, I think, that you used within it that kind of summed up the opportunity and summed up, I think, really what's been going on in AI over the past 18 months, 2 years, during this level of profound acceleration and deepening of the technologies. And it was the idea that it's gone from a can-do, we can do AI, we can do digitization, all of these things, to we must do it.
Yeah, and I think this is the message I'm trying to share with an awful lot of my clients at the moment, Ian, is that, you know, there really is time for action on this, right? You know, we've had the phase of experimentation, and of course you're going to say that's a self-interest statement for a consulting company, but the thing we're hearing from our clients is that actually they're using these techniques and they're starting to see some real outcomes. So they're seeing the ability to sell more to customers. They're seeing the ability to reduce costs, create efficiencies, improve productivity in the day-to-day. And those results, there's no argument around those results. So the experimentation phase, I would say, is over. Some of the techniques that have been around for 10 years, like, there's no question actually about the fact that they can deliver results. So our clients are now going from actually experimentation to real action. And I guess what I would say, Ian, is that if you're not doing it, if your company's not doing it, someone else is, right? And so AI is starting to move from this interesting technology experiment now into, you know, CEO, CFO saying this is competitive advantage. This is a way we're going to understand customers better. We're going to enhance our supply chain. And that's a really, really big deal.
And I will. I'll come to some of those benefits and how it can impact businesses in a moment. But I'm interested in that it's gone from, you know, and I mentioned before about this acceleration and deepening of change. If we were having this conversation 2 years ago, even 18 months ago, people were still looking at ChatGPT and going, oh, that's a bit of crack. I'm playing around with it on my phone or on the desktop and I'm looking about, not necessarily in real world applications, but just on trying to get their heads around the technology.
Yeah.
But it really has become embedded in a lot of organizations now.
Yeah, I would say I would always frame this discussion with two families of AI in our traditional stuff, right? And we've just talked about that. There's no question you've got to engage, you've got to use it, you know, get it moving, all the machine learning type stuff. And then our new family of Gen AI.
Yeah. Which has moved the dial.
Which has moved the dial. And it's moved the dial because it's, the, you know, it's put AI in everyone's hands, right? And there are some really good, we call them use cases emerging. So how you use Gen AI to help your software developers, right? 20% saving in some organizations. How you use Gen AI to maybe interact with customers. You get a request from a customer, is it able to have a go at first draft customer response based on the history? How you're using Gen AI on simple productivity gains with things like Copilot. So what I think has happened with that acceleration you've talked about, Ian, in the last 24 months is it's forced people to look at their wider AI and data agenda, right? And they're getting a mix of the new family and the old family. But that doesn't kind of matter because both will deliver really, really good outcomes. And there's probably a little bit of catch-up happening on the old AI for an awful lot of organizations.
And is that message, as they embrace both Gen AI and AI, and I think it's an interesting point again that you make, because you might, everything always seems new, but in reality, we're just talking about a new aspect of a technology that's been around for a while, an upgrade. But as you're talking to companies, is that sort of value creation piece starting to get through into the boardrooms, into the C-level, the C-suite executives?
No doubt, Ian. And the way I gauge that is who's the conversation you're having in most of your clients, right? And I mean, sure, there's plenty of our clients are head of data, head of AI, you know, head of IT. But probably the majority are CEO, CFO, board level who are trying to grapple, you know, with this agenda. And, you know, I think a lot of organizations are really struggling with it, right? So they're not sure what to ask for and they're not sure if what they're being told always, you know, is kind of, or what they're hearing, you know, really can fly. So I think what they're seeing is that in some industries, they're seeing competition from, you know, either other organizations in their sector or big tech, actually, in some cases, eating their lunch. And they're starting to see that actually AI is having a real change. I mean, if you take something like Shein, you know, as an organization, I mean, they have a fascinating business model. They don't manufacture anything until they get signals from the market around what they think people will buy. You think about that for a second, it completely changes how that business model operates. So we're seeing then that prompting of the executive starting to now look at this as a kind of a strategic agenda, and they're picking out places then, whether that's in customer or that's in supply chain or that's in back office finance, where they can really go after the value creation opportunities.
I think it's interesting when you talk about that value creation piece, because I think the initial fear, and again, even 18 months ago, 2 years ago, was that AI, automation, digitization, it's all about costs. It's all about reducing your costs, and I'm going to boost profitability by cutting out staff, other products, whatever else. I think the agenda and the conversation is more moving to, well, can we do things about new capabilities, speed of doing business, enhancing the customer experience, helping your people actually do more?
Yeah, I think so. I think the discussion is on a much more positive footing, you know, to use your language, Ian, over the last kind of 6 to 12 months. And, you know, there's no doubt that there can be productivity gains, but actually, like, we're not hearing about that in cost-cutting terms. We're hearing people say that, number one, we think AI can give a strategic advantage, you know, to our discussion we just had a second ago. But number two, if it does free our people up, well, it's freeing them up to do things that we'd really like them to be doing, right?
And adding that they want to do themselves.
And that they, more importantly, that they want to do themselves. And if that means that, you know, your 40 hour a week work gets down to 36 and it gives you a couple of hours back, or more importantly, or as importantly, it means that it frees a couple of hours for you to work with your colleagues better, that's a fantastic outcome for the organization.
I mentioned at the start that an awful lot of business leaders and people working within businesses have fears and some worries about what this means for their business, for their operating model, for their jobs. And I think there's also a lot of fear as well about, am I using these new technologies, these emerging technologies, safely and responsibly?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Ian. And I mean, it is very reflective of what's happening in some organizations. And I think... It's very natural for people to feel, you know, a level of fear. This is change. You know, it's not a new pattern in organizations. We've seen as systems get implemented, you know, as they change roles, restructuring, all those kind of things, there's always a level of fear, and there's a lot of work to do in the AI arena to help people think through space. I think the big difference, you know, to your point really, is around, you know, the trust, you know, that employees and indeed customers will have in the company to use this very, very powerful technology safely. And I think for me, that goes back an awful lot to values in organizations, right? You know, we've loads of technologies that have existed for a long time that they could be doing things with, let's call it that. And okay, now they've more powerful technology. So the values don't change, right? You know, you've got a relationship with the organization and there's trust there. But on top of values, we've also got regulation, you know, coming into this space.
And more regulation coming in.
Absolutely. So we've had over the last year the EU AI Act, you know, getting finalised. We're seeing our clients now starting to look at the compliance requirements. And the AI Act is, you know, we think a strong framework to help with that trust and that kind of ethical use of AI. It really, you know, mandates organizations to think about how they're using AI, where they're using AI. And number one, there's certain places where they're just not allowed to use it. And then if it's in a high risk situation, the Act mandates that they put really strong controls around their use and their documentation and the testing of AI so things can't go wrong.
And I mentioned the boardroom at the start, and you were saying you were talking to people in the boardroom. I was reading some of your blogs, and they're very good on EY's website on this. But one of your blogs really said boardrooms have to take responsibility for this because it's such a profound, you know, pivot change within an organization.
Yeah, I think so. And sometimes when you say that, people think that you're focusing immediately on the risk side of the equation. But actually, I think it's as important for boards to think about the opportunity side as well. Like, they have to really be pushing their management teams to think about, are you using AI If you're not using AI, what are the areas we should be thinking about using AI? What are our competitors doing in this space, particularly if it's as profound and business model changing? So that's on that side. And then equally, you know, they of course have to take responsibility for the risk side of the equation.
So it's opportunity and risk.
Completely. Yeah.
You're doing a lot of work in EY. EY Labs invested an awful lot of money in it. Even the organization itself is using its own private large language model, EYQ. You might just talk to us a little bit about what you're doing in AI Labs within EY and how that's, you know, engaging with clients and where that process is going.
Yeah, one of the reasons, Ian, we launched AI Labs was this is a new technology area. And, you know, to our discussion earlier on, people are grappling with where do we point it? You know, where are the places in our sector that people are using AI? So Labs was launched really to try and demystify that for our clients. So often we'll have about, you know, two clients in every week into our AI lab. What we're doing in those experiences with our clients is we're helping them understand, number one, where AI is being applied outside their organization, right? So help give them a view for what's possible. Then secondly, we're oftentimes using their data, their processes to try and help them imagine what AI could do, right? So this isn't trying to, you know, implement it in a day, but it's trying to give a picture of what's possible. And then we will work with them to try and think about, well, with all that information, you know, what's the right path forward for you? So it's a real practical way of trying to get our clients to think about where should we be using AI. And then the other part of what you mentioned, Ian, around EYQ and some of the tools we've been deploying ourselves, I mean, that's often, we call it our client zero, you know, reference case, you know, and you know, we as an organization are, you know, knowledge workers. AI is going to have a big part to play in our future as well. So oftentimes our clients find it very helpful to hear about, you know, the challenges that we've encountered as we've rolled out large language models, you know, Copilot, using AI into our day to day.
I went down a, I don't want to say an AI rabbit hole, it's a cliche, but I went down, I was looking at the Labs project that you're doing about how you actually go about it, because I expected it to run for pages and pages. It's actually straightforward. It's, you know, maturity assessment. This is where you are at the moment. So it's a kind of a, almost like, you know, a SWOT analysis of what you're doing. Then it's come up with your strategy. Let's come up with a prototype of what it is and then implement. So it's designed, I imagine, to get from that blue sky thinking piece that you referred to right through to implementation without too many steps.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing you want in a very fast moving technology space is to spend 6 months disappearing into a hole trying to design something. So with AI Labs, the whole idea is to try and bring our clients into a space, work beside them to try and think about where AI can be applied, and then rapidly show them what's possible. And this, the outputs of that are incredible, actually. We've had clients that have gone from an AI lab session to 6 months later having a yield improvement on their manufacturing lines across 10 sites of 3-4%. We've gone from situations where we've had an AI lab session and 3 months later they've implemented a cross-sell model and they're seeing a 7-8% increase in revenue. So this is not, you know, Star Trek stuff in terms of use of AI. This is real practical. In your business, with the challenges you face, how can you make AI work?
I suppose the key thing then, almost finally, Owen, is how you can make this. So you're making it real for companies. But I think, do you think there is still a little bit of resistance, particularly among smaller companies? Not, I mean, when I reference the companies you're advising, we're talking multinationals, corporations, government departments, they have to be invested in it. How do you, does that message get through to companies who mightn't necessarily have that scale, and for them, they're looking at it and saying, I don't have the resources to play this game?
Well, we're really lucky in that we've got our Entrepreneur of the Year program where we work and deal with many of the types of organizations that you're referring to there. And you know what? I find it incredible to watch them embrace AI, right? Their entrepreneurial nature normally means that they're not afraid to experiment. And that experimentation starts to get them use some of the general purpose tools. So you might see less of the big AI program, big change. But what you do see with them is very practical uses of, you know, the ChatGPT toolset, you know, the Copilot toolset that's being made available through software vendors. And that's a great start on their AI journey. You know, as they mature, they'll start to use these technologies more and they'll see more value in their business.
And it gets straight to their bottom line and top line quicker, I suppose.
Exactly right. Because in an organization like that, they're able to move very, very quickly, you know, adapt their processes and see the change very quickly.
So I mentioned a couple of times that the pace of change has just been accelerating faster and faster. That's not going to stop. How can companies ensure that they're dealing with what's going on?
So I think you're right. I think my advice to them would be is you got to get started, right? You cannot continue to sit in your hands on this, because the longer you sit in your hands, the more difficult it is. You're gonna you know, kind of lose pace, right? You're going to fall behind, and the more difficult it is to get started at kind of a later stage. So that's the first thing I do is get going. Second thing I do is don't be afraid to experiment. Some of this stuff is not going to work perfectly in your organization, but you've got to get going to change the mindset and start to see the results coming out. And then thirdly, I would say don't forget about the data, right? It's the forgotten cousin, but AI will not work without good data. So you need to spend time in that. Do it in parallel to your value delivery in AI, but certainly give it attention.
Okay, well, we started with data and we'll finish with data. Owen O'Reilly, a partner with EY in Dublin and the firm's leader for AI and data, thank you very much for joining me here today.
Thanks, Ian.
You've been listening to the Currency.news podcast. It pays to be curious.